From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the EU expects to sign a far-reaching free trade agreement with South Korea. On that note, President Obama says he wants to advance free trade agreements with U.S. partners like South Korea. And he reminded the press of an administrative goal to double the export of U.S. goods and commodities over the next 5 years. Dave Dickey will have all the details shortly. In the second half hour of our program today, we'll get in the old Wayback Machine and journey to 1985. It was a rough time in farm country, and Willie Nelson in that year and on this campus hosted the first of many Farm Aid concerts. We'll hear from Sean Powers. That's in the farming world, and if you can't hear it on this radio station, you can always pick it up online at willag.org. Look for the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. Nearby December contract for the soft red up 20 at 739 and a quarter, July of next year. The harvest month at 747 and a quarter, up 15 and a quarter. December corn futures rallied 13 and a rather 17 and a quarter cents today at 513 and a quarter on their settlement price. March corn at 525 and three quarters, up 17. May at 530 and three quarters, 17 and a quarter higher. July at 533 and a quarter, up 16 and a quarter. And December at 477 and three quarters, up 5 and three quarters. November beans at $10.69, 32 and three quarters higher. January at 1078 and a quarter, up 32 and a quarter. And the March at 1084 and three quarters, up 30 and three quarters. November beans of next year at 1056, 28 and a half cents higher. October meal at 304.70, up 11.60. October oil 41.91, up 55. Live cattle futures, and there was a cattle on feed report we'll get to a bit later today, 99.40 in the October, 70 higher. October lean hogs at 77.70, down 50 cents for the day. And the September feeders at 111.82 and a half, down 40. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. October crude oil futures, $73.67 a barrel, down 90 cents today. Ethanol at $2.14 and 7 tenths of a cent, up 7 and 4 tenths of a cent. Natural gas at $4 and 6 tenths of a cent, down 5 and 6 tenths. Heating oil at $2.09 and 9 tenths of a cent. That's just about unchanged. In the gold futures today at $1,275.60 an ounce, a settlement price up $3.70. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is 18 points higher at this hour, 10,612, and the dollar at 81.4 is up 0.13. The CRB index on the afternoon now stands at 279.65. It's up 0.96 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for this evening and the weekend from the National Weather Service. They say skies will be sunny this afternoon. A high in Urbana-Champaign near 77 degrees. Partly cloudy this evening, a low around 56. Tomorrow, partly sunny, a high near 81. And south-southwest winds about 6 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, a 30% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy skies, a low of 57. Northeast winds around 5 miles an hour. Sunday, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a high near 76. East winds then at 5. And then Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 57. The extended forecast says Monday will be mostly sunny, the high around 85. Clear on Monday night, a low of 63. Tuesday, sunny, a high of 89. And Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy, a low of 64 degrees. We get out to Wednesday to be partly sunny and 81. Wednesday night, a low of 59 and partly cloudy. And Thursday, it'll remain sunny. The high near 81 degrees. More when we get to the bottom of the hour on the agricultural weather forecast.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tim Wells in Moline at 309-797-7369. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. USDA, a few minutes ago, released its cattle on feed report. It shows on feed as of September the 1st at 103%. Placements during August at 107, and the marketings during the month of August at 107. The marketings number, when we talk here with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, was within the trade range. The placements, though, were above it at 107. The average trade guess there at 99.5. That's quite a number.
It is, Todd. And, you know, between the on-feed number and that placements number, because on-feed was a little bit above trade range as well at 103, between the corn rally and those two numbers, I'm not sure enough premium's been taken out of the feeders at this point. So we're very oversold in the daily charts for both cattle and feeders, and we have seen the feeders break to the fats the last couple of weeks. So maybe we can get a little bit of a short covering rally off this report, you know, kind of a sell the rumor by the fact. But I'd be looking as a speculator to maybe fade the rallies and as a hedger to sell rallies and get some coverage in place on the feeder side.
Let me make sure I got everything right in that, because there was a lot of jargon. So
sure.
We're oversold in the cattle market.
Right.
This would be a number that should look bearish to the cattle market because of the sheer size of the numbers, and it's above what the analysts were suggesting in a couple of places. And then on top of that, we have a big rally in the corn market and others as well.
Right.
Given all of that, you think it might be one that they would fade on the bottom side. So despite the conditions in Chicago, it could put a little uptick into the marketplace on Monday?
Yeah, I think you might want to, you know, cattle are kind of peculiar. The cattle traders try and price in ahead of time what they think is going to happen. And when they're right, they usually try and, you know, cover their short or buy back their short position in this case. And I think that may be possible Monday, Tuesday. But I wouldn't probably buy into that type of mindset. I'd go ahead and use any kind of rallies to go ahead and get hedged if I were a hedger. And I'd probably go ahead and start speculating against continued liquidation pressure down the road here, especially from a standpoint of a livestock producer, because these corn prices, they are starting to eat into livestock producers' margins. And I had a lot of calls this week from livestock producers about the corn and about the meal. So I'm nervous that the feeders have another leg down. Any short-term bounce that we get Monday on a sell the rumor, buy the fact type market, I'd go ahead and hedge into.
Yeah. So for the corn farmer and for the feeders both, I suppose, what this really though says is that they placed them. They're there. And if they did that in the month of August, we've got those cattle for 18 months.
You bet. There's no question. This is a nice report for the corn market, but I think it goes back to, at the same time, if the prices remain high in corn, those cattle will probably be fed out at a lot lighter weights. They'll probably come to the market a lot faster than normal. And so you're probably going to see the corn demand with those cattle in the lots, you know, get pretty tight and decrease quite substantially as the corn price goes up. They'll try and move those out of lots as fast as they possibly can, I think.
Were you listening to the squawk boxes from Chicago today? I bet they were just abuzz with all kinds of news. I've just read it. Friday's my busy day of the week, and I walked in and looked at some of the things that were happening. Wow, what a day in Chicago.
So much going on. You know, we had the frost scare propping up the beans, the frost scare in Canada propping up the beans all week long, and it kind of gave the beans a better look than the feed grains. But then we came in this morning with talk that China may actually have a frost later this week, and golly, the real knuckleball and the real curveball that came in was midday when Secretary of Ag Vilsack said that he thought that EPA would be looking at potentially raising that ethanol mandate to 15%. Now, at first, it looked there was no real number given as far as what year car, but doing a little bit more digging, it looks like the testing by EPA on models 2007 and later will be done by the end of September. That's probably what they'll make a determination on. I think that's probably what Vilsack was talking about. But regardless of that particular issue, the trade really liked what they saw there or what they heard there, and we carved out new highs. We're back to levels not seen since early October 2008 in both Dease corn and Nove beans. We ended up allowing the wheat to close higher on the week by, I think, around 3 cents. We came into this morning down about 13 or 14 on the week.
Okay. In an uptrending market, generally speaking, you try to, or at least the general thought is you try to reward it with cash sales. Producers are in the process of harvesting a corn crop. Should they make sales across the scale? And I suspect that they're what? How they're sold at 50%, 370? Where? 380,
yeah, 390? I think that's probably a fair number. I mean, I've got a list here of my clients, and they're anywhere from 35 to 72% sold right now in terms of the clients that I've talked to the last 2 weeks. And I think what I've been trying to do is work very cautiously on cash sales. So I would say I would not be moving over 70% in cash sales at this time in corn or beans all the way through the end of the month. But I would be moving towards 100% of hedged production between now and the end of the month, with that last 30% being in the paper positions, because I do feel like this is a market to reward, and I guess I feel like that at this stage of the game, we're putting in a lot of bullish news, and I'm starting to see some demand slippage here, and I think that demand slippage is every bit as important as any supply slippage that we're going to see due to frost, due to yield reduction in future USDA reports, so on and so forth.
Okay, you're going to have to nail the demand slippage down for me. Where do you see it?
Well, the weekly export sales in this week showed me, with the Egyptian cancellations of around 375,000 tons, that was one thing. I think the fact that the corn export sales being at a 3.5-month low for the week was another thing. I think, Todd, it goes back to when you look at the fund money that is coming in, take a look at what the cash market's doing, and the cash market is still fighting this futures rally. Maybe that's because we're in the early part of harvest, and maybe a lot of bushels are still going to the elevator, but at some point, very, very soon, we're going to have to make a determination of whether the supplies are really dropping faster than demand, and if they are, that Gulf basis is going to turn back around, the interior basis is going to turn back around, and the cash market's going to lead, not the futures market. So I'd like to see a structural shift. And speaking of structural shift, Dave and I talked about it real briefly today. One thing that happened with the wheat expiration, the September contract expiration this week in Chicago, was these futures did not pick up the ball and go higher. It's now discount to the July. It's back to a carrying charge market. That's a structural shift of what we've been used to this last 3 months, and it puts you back into more of a normal market for wheat, where the producer is being told to hold his wheat in the elevator, the commercial, the Board of Trade is paying carry to have that producer hold that wheat back. So I think there's some structural issues here that we have to contend with. Those structural issues were completely overshadowed this week by these crop scares, and rightfully so. The market is very nervous about supplies.
We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Todd, have a wonderful weekend, sir.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org.
In agricultural news, the European Union agreed on Thursday to sign a free trade agreement with South Korea, one of the most far-reaching trade pacts between the Union and a third party. The deal is due to be formally signed at an EU-South Korea summit in Brussels on October 6th and will come into force from July 1st of 2011. Meanwhile, President Barack Obama said yesterday he wants to advance free trade agreements with U.S. partners, including important ally South Korea, and he repeated a vow to double America's exports over the next 5 years. The president has said he wants to resolve outstanding concerns over a trade pact with South Korea by November, when he will visit the country to attend a Group of 20 Leaders summit so he can submit the agreement to Congress by early next year. The United Fresh Produce Association is urging passage of a child nutrition bill by September 30th that would increase purchases of fruits and vegetables for the child nutrition program. But the prospects are complicated by disagreements in the House and among advocates over how to pay for the bill. House members and nutrition and anti-hunger advocates disagree over whether to offset the cost of the bill by using a $4.5 billion cut in food stamps over 10 years that the Senate used to pass the same bill unanimously this summer. A lawsuit accusing two Iowa farms at the heart of a recall of 550 million eggs linked to salmonella illnesses was filed Wednesday in federal court in Chicago on behalf of six people who became ill. The lawsuit claims Wright County Egg and Hillendale Farms were negligent in not producing eggs safe for public consumption and suggests that the actual number of people who became ill could far exceed the number already reported. No dollar amount was specified in the lawsuit. Meanwhile, senators yesterday approved Elizabeth Hagen as the top food safety official at the USDA. Hagen was approved by voice vote yesterday. It took the administration nearly a year after taking office to announce Hagen, USDA's chief medical officer, as its nominee for the job. The U.S. Labor Department says that it is suing Tyson Foods over allegations that managers at one of the meatpacking giant's beef plants discriminated against women. The Labor Department filed the suit in Washington, D.C., saying managers at Tyson's cattle slaughtering plant in Joslyn, Illinois, systematically rejected women seeking entry-level positions in 2003 and 2004. Tyson said in a statement that the company did not discriminate against the unhired women. The Labor Department is seeking back wages for more than 750 women and wants Tyson to offer jobs at the plant to more than 100 women. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. You can listen to either program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, up next, you know, officials are continuing to try from the administration to resolve several agricultural trade disputes with some big U.S. customer countries. Gary Crawford has more.
Even though U.S. export sales of agricultural products are predicted to approach record levels over the next year,
we will continue to work to reopen markets that have been closed, to expand markets that have existed, and to open markets where none have been opened before.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, and right now there are several disputes or problems he's trying to solve with countries that are already large markets for U.S. farm and food products. First, Russia. That country had banned U.S. poultry imports after being a huge market for us in the past. The issue, ostensibly, was problems Russian food safety people had with how U.S. processors cleaned and sterilized chicken carcasses. As you may remember, back at the end of June, President Obama announced,
"Today we've reached an agreement that will allow the United States to begin exporting our poultry products to Russia once again."
But Russia slapped new requirements onto that agreement, and U.S. poultry still is not moving. However, Secretary Vilsack told reporters a few days ago negotiations are progressing.
"We are working through a process that will open up opportunities in the very near future. So, you know, I'm convinced that we're going to see shipments very, very soon."
Next, let's go to Japan. Currently, it has very tight restrictions on U.S. beef as to the age of the animals from which that beef comes and the type of beef. This has limited U.S. access to that market. So where are we in trying to solve this one? Secretary Vilsack says on his recent trip to Japan, the two countries agreed to set up new technical teams of experts. And now,
"I believe that we're on the way to having those technical teams meet. And all indications are that these will be serious and comprehensive discussions. So I'm hopeful."
But he said not overly hopeful.
"We've been on the brink before of a breakthrough, and we've had to take a step back. But I think that there is some indication that we can at least begin discussion."
The step back mostly was due to having to work with a new government in Japan that's only been in place for about a year. Meanwhile, China still has a basic total ban on U.S. beef. That was put in place in 2003 after BSE was found in the U.S. Vilsack telling reporters,
"We continue to talk We are making progress, but there's still obviously some discussions that have to take place.
Meanwhile, closer to home, who knew a dispute with Mexico over trucks? U.S. restrictions on Mexican trucks crossing into the U.S. would cause Mexico to slap tariffs on several U.S. agricultural product imports, but that's what's happened, and Vilsack said he and Transportation Secretary LaHood are working on it.
So our hope is that we get this resolved very, very soon. I can't give you a specific timeline, but I can tell you that we're working on this every day.
So these are just a few of the ag trade disputes that U.S. officials are trying to iron out to help increase markets for U.S. farm goods. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon, and that means this evening at 4:30, I'll sit down in the studio and record Commodity Week. Our guest this week will be Jerry Gahlke. If you get the opportunity, you can always hear it on one of these radio stations or listen online at WILLAG.org. Jerry Gahlke is our guest on Commodity Week this week. Time now to check in on the agricultural cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, has been working, I know, feverishly over the last week for sure, probably 2 weeks, maybe a bit longer where he is. In Ludlow, just to the north of Champaign, Illinois. How are you doing today?
We're going.
Are you tired yet?
It's that time of year.
But this one
is going to just be totally different from last year. It's going to be short and fast.
Short and fast, I suspect. Are they bringing beans in, too, or are they doing mostly corn?
Still mostly corn. I expect them to see more beans coming in any day. But a lot of guys are wrapping corn up before they switch over to the soybeans.
Has there been a transition in yields over time from good to better?
No, the yields have just been very spotty. I had one guy today with 100 bushel an acre variation between his good field and bad field.
And it's been like that pretty much, I think, your whole time, right?
Yeah. Everything's lower than last year. But a tremendous variation on it.
Yeah, and from your other locations, what are you hearing? Is there that much variability across a good, and there are 10 of them across central Illinois?
Quite a bit of variation. Basically, east of I-57 is running worse than west of I-57, and with a little blob hidden west in the whole load of Buckley area.
Okay, and then how's basis holding up in the area?
Beans had been hanging up real well until today. Today's rally broke stuff back 3 to 5 cents on the nearby processors, seeing some of those numbers break back again. Corn, we're at 36 under and just keep hanging in there, and I'm not sure if we're going to store any corn. I think we're just going to buy it all across the scale.
Is that really true? It's just coming in and they're making the sales?
Huh? Yep.
And you think that's an okay, obviously you're buying, so... But from your perspective, that's the right thing to do?
It's not unreasonable. I mean, the amount of carry out there is just about what storage charges are, so it's pretty much of a wash. People are storing on farm and selling to the elevator.
All right. Thank you much. What are your bids for the day?
We are at 477 on nearby corn and 1039 on soybeans.
Okay. Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Under legislation passed yesterday in the U.S. House, rural homeowners could get loans of about $3,000 to $7,500 to make their homes more energy efficient. Democrats said the loan program would promote construction jobs, boost American manufacturers, and help bring down rural energy costs. It passed 240 to 172 and now must be considered by the Senate. Federal regulators are set to propose new rules that could make it harder for financial firms to disguise their level of debt. The expanded disclosure requirements would apply to banks' practice of temporarily trimming their debt at the end of quarters to make their financial statements appear stronger. The practice is legal, but regulators say it can give investors a distorted picture of a bank's debt and level of risk. Lehman Brothers used the so-called repurchase agreements as an accounting trick in the months before its collapse into the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history 2 years ago. And the Labor Department today says that consumer prices posted a small rise in August. Consumer prices edged up 0.3%, matching the July increase. Core inflation, which excludes food and energy, showed no increase in August. Over the past 12 months, core inflation is up just 0.9%, matching the lowest 12-month gain in 44 years. Overall, prices are up a modest 1.1% during the past 12 months. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. In with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, is Steve Hilberg. He's the director there. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It is another beautiful day here in the Midwest, cool and sunny.
Yeah, we've had a pretty good week for the most part. Temperatures this week did run a little bit above normal, as we did push into the 80s in many areas early in the week. But today we're looking at temperatures in the lower to mid-70s, a few upper 70s further south, and clear skies. It's really a gorgeous day from all the way from the Rocky Mountains to the to Ohio.
Nice,
so looking good.
Weather, humidities are low.
Yep. Dew points are down in the around 50 or so, upper 40s, low 50s. That's been the characteristic of September so far. Is not we have been warm at times, but the air has been rather dry, and we lost all the humid weather that we had, of course, most of the summer. So it's been very nice in that regard because it cools off very nicely at night.
How unusual is that?
Frankly, to go this long of a stretch without another surge of humidity seems to be a little unusual, especially since we seem to be hammered all summer with constant high dew points. But we don't really have a climatology of dew points that anybody tracks. But I would say just from experience, having this long of a stretch with this much comfortable weather this early in the fall is actually it's not unusual, but it certainly doesn't happen every year.
Will it remain that way over the weekend and into next week?
Well, I think we're going to see a little bit more moisture creeping in, especially into the southern half of the state. The flow aloft is going to become pretty much west to east with some pretty strong waves moving across the Great Lakes and upper Midwest. And that will push a front down across us actually tomorrow night into Sunday, which could trigger a few showers, maybe one or two that might have some thunder across northern and maybe north central Illinois, and another substantial front coming Wednesday. So ahead of each of those systems, we'll see a little surge in moisture, but nothing long-lasting right now. This is the time of year where weather systems start moving through pretty rapidly, and even if we get hot or humid for a day, it tends to change every 2 to 3 days.
And if you look out across Illinois, Indiana, we still got some real dry pockets, I assume.
Yeah, we do. It improved a little bit this early in September with the rain we have, but we're still showing pretty good dryness pretty much over the southeastern half of Indiana, the far southern tip of Illinois, and right along the Ohio River. The rest of Illinois has done pretty well with the rain we received the first half of the month. It just didn't come in time in August to help out the crops.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Nope, should be good, and I hope everybody has a great week and enjoying the weather.
Thanks much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Stay with us, if you can, for the Farming World. That's up next. You can always find it online at willag.org as part of the Closing Market Report download. Today, we'll look back 25 years to the Farm Aid concert that started them all. Stay with us, if you can. Sean Powers reports the 12-hour Farm Aid event in Champaign was organized to shed light on the challenges facing farmers in the 1980s.
Here's how AM 580 reporters Charles Lindy and Debbie Hovaker introduced one of the largest benefit concerts in U.S. history.
This is Information Radio AM 580 WILL Urbana. The organizers of the Farm Aid concert hope it will bring in those millions of dollars to benefit farm families.
But as David Inge reports, the events will also mean a windfall for the host cities.
It's impossible at this point to say exactly how much money will pour into central Illinois as a result of the concert. It's no exaggeration to say that every room within 50 miles of Champaign-Urbana is booked for the weekend.
The rain has stopped and the people are fired up. I'm Adam Nielsen with the 107 Farm Aid update. It's still overcast, but that hasn't kept the stars from shining at the Farm Aid benefit concert over here at Memorial Stadium.
Now, more of Farm Aid from Champaign, Illinois.
About 80,000 spectators, stagehands, and performers swarmed into town. But what some people may not realize is that the event was organized within a month. It all started when folk artist Bob Dylan mentioned the idea of raising money to help farmers. He spoke earlier that summer at Live Aid, a benefit concert to raise money for famine relief in Ethiopia.
Maybe they could just take a little bit of it, maybe 1 or 2 million, maybe. And use it, say, to pay the mortgages on some of the farms that the farmers here owe to the banks.
Things really started to get cooking in August after country artist Willie Nelson and his golfing buddy, then Illinois Governor Jim Thompson, met over a bowl of chili at the Illinois State Fair. Farm Aid's director, Carolyn Mugar, says this meeting, which centered on a concern for the nation's farmers, blossomed into an annual multi-performance concert.
And that's how it got rolling, you know. I mean, and immediately people jumped on board. Neil Young, John Mellencamp, and a host of other artists.
It was the stories of farmers across the nation that got artists like Neil Young, John Mellencamp, and Willie Nelson thinking about putting on a benefit concert.
We did it in Champaign, Illinois, right in the Farm Belt, right where Big Jim said, let's do it. And he was right. Those people there were hurting, and they needed some attention, and they needed to know that somebody out there was thinking about them.
Governor Thompson volunteered the University of Illinois' Memorial Stadium as the site of the concert, and by September 16th, an onslaught of 48 semi-trailer trucks arrived in Champaign, filled with the parts needed to build the stage. Over the next week, about 1,000 people helped cover the stadium's astroturf, strung miles of electrical cables, and prepared the show for national broadcast.
And the stadium's right across the street to the north. We're heading over there now.
Pat Collins helped set up the stage. These days, Collins works as a building engineer at the U of I's Assembly Hall. The stage, which was the same one used during Live Aid a couple of months earlier, rotated. As one band performed, another one was on the other side setting up.
And it started revolving slowly, and the crowd came to life, this giant roar. And as it turned around, you know, it gave me goosebumps, that's for sure.
During our breaks, this crowd is doing the wave out here. The Eli and I have
it's
really...
wonderful.
They've really got that down, and they're screaming out in unison
in
that 1-800-FARM-AID number.
Throughout the show, Willie Nelson would come on stage to tell the audience to call...
800-FARM-AID.
Nelson says he was blown away by the response to Farm Aid.
Well, I think about the fact that we sold it out in a matter of a few days and that those people showed up and they stayed with us all day and they let us know that they think that we're doing the right thing.
It's really kind of amazing to be in a place with 100,000 of your closest friends. I'd never been to something that big before.
That's Ned Newhouse. He was one of the thousands of screaming fans. Newhouse now works for Caterpillar in Peoria, but at that time, he was a young U of I student.
You know, the performance that Neil Young specifically that day gave broadened my perspectives musically. I don't know if I call it a protest song, so to speak, but it kind of captures the essence of the rock and roll attitude and the fact that, you know, the kind of catch line is, hey, hey, my, my, rock and roll will never die.
Out of the blue and into the black.
The songs brought thousands of people together, but this event was about much more than the music.
Hi, Bonnie. Ain't that America for you and me? Ain't that America for something to see, baby?
Mark Rubel teaches history of rock music at Parkland Community College and at Eastern Illinois University. He was at the first Farm Aid concert.
We were standing in the audience watching John Cougar Mellencamp play. And he was playing his song Little Pink Houses, which is all about being American and ain't that America, little pink houses for you and me. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I'm just about knocked over by this giant guy's elbow. He's a huge mountainous guy. And he says, hey, ain't that America? I guess he was, turns out he was overcome with patriotic sentiment. I didn't know if he was going to beat me up or what. I think I probably stammered out, oh yeah, it probably is, or something.
Let me hear you sing it one time real loud with us!
Farm Aid wasn't the first marathon concert to promote civic responsibility. It premiered about 15 years after George Harrison's benefit for Bangladesh, 5 years after the No Nukes concert, and 2 months after Live Aid. Rubel says Farm Aid showed the world that the United States wasn't immune to social and economic challenges.
When people have a certain amount of power and a certain amount of attention, it's inspiring for them to use it wisely.
When the evening sun goes down, you're gonna find me at Farm Aid. Somewhere hanging around, I said, Farm Aid.
When Farm Aid was announced, organizers like Willie Nelson said the focus wasn't the millions of dollars they hoped to raise, but bringing attention to the plight of the American farmer.
Farm Aid, in 25 years, along with millions of people and hundreds of artists, thousands really, who've showed up, donated their time for 25 years trying to get something done to help the small family farmer. This hasn't happened. You know, the good news is we've been around 25 years. The bad news, we've been around 25 years, you know.
By the end of the day, Farm Aid raised more than $9 million, only about 20% of what Nelson hoped to raise. That money helped farmers pay their utility bills and kept them from going into foreclosure. It also supported a farmer hotline and food pantry and offered mental health services for people stressed out over the possibility of losing farmland. But it wasn't nearly enough to cover the nation's $172 billion farm debt. Now, to get a sense of what life was like for small family farmers in the 1980s who Farm Aid was trying to help, talk to David and Anita Schrader. They operate a dairy, grain, and cattle farm in Coal Valley, Illinois, near the Iowa border. The farm's been in David's family for more than 70 years. Anita also grew up on a farm just a couple of miles away. It's in their blood.
All right, then that heifer got out where she's down there somewhere.
The husband and wife team prepare to milk their cows. The milk that the cows will produce will be sucked into a large metal tank through small tubes attached to the cow's teats. David and Anita secure each tube. The whole process of milking the cows takes a couple of hours.
How many hours a week do you work?
Right at 100.
About 100 hours a week.
Yeah, a lot of people, that's all they do is look forward to their retirement. I thought, well, you must not like your job.
It's a job the Schraders have fought to keep. Like many small family farmers during the 1980s, they were hit hard by sinking land values, interest rates hovering around 20%, and a series of droughts.
The 1980s was a time that will live in memory of anybody that went through it. The next period that would probably compare to it would have been the 20s and 30s.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. To understand why the 1980s were so bad for small family farms, Schnitke says you need to look back at the 1970s, when land values were much higher and people were willing to take out a loan and go into debt to purchase property. They were under the impression that they could recoup their losses with higher returns when they sold their land.
It's very similar to what happened in the housing market here a couple years ago. We had people buying houses because housing prices kept rising. Then all of a sudden we had a downturn in the economy. People couldn't make the payments and housing prices fell. And that sort of made the whole thing feed on itself.
The average price of an acre of farmland declined by more than 60% between 1981 and 1987. With economic problems for farmers beginning to spread, banks started tightening their lending policies, making it difficult for farmers to get a loan. David's wife, Anita, recounts the family's frustration.
Let's see, I think in 80 we applied and we were turned down because we weren't bad enough. And then we had the 82 and 83, the droughts, and then we reapplied and then they said we were too bad. It was just a matter of weeks and the bank was going to foreclose on us.
The Schraders are proud farmers. So proud, in fact, that back then they didn't want to ask the public for help. So David's brother did it for them.
His brother had run this ad in the newspaper, in the St. Louis newspaper. It says, Illinois farm family needs $400,000 to consolidate high interest loans.
Was that unusual for somebody to be exposed in that way?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know of anybody else that was, you know, and there was a lot of guys that were going, you know, bankrupt and selling out.
And committing suicide. Oh, yeah. We had some in the community that committed suicide because they kept it all within themselves. Being exposed probably helped us survive. It made us stronger.
The Schraders started getting calls for interviews from reporters all over the country.
Every morning for 40 years, someone named Schrader has been up at dawn to milk the cows here. Today, the family is so desperately in debt that it placed a classified ad.
Why stay with it, even during all that? Why not just give up?
You don't stop doing something you like to do. I mean, that makes no sense. In the 80s, I never even thought about not making it.
His philosophy is he's not a farmer. He feeds people.
Yeah, done that since I was 8 years old.
The Schraders were able to get small contributions from people touched by their story, a few $100 from Farm Aid, and above all, a loan from a bank. Within a month after they started giving interviews, the organizers of Farm Aid put together a star-studded event held 3 hours away in Champaign.
But tomorrow morning, a man from the bank's gonna come and take it all away.
One of the 80,000 concert attendees was Lisa Braddock, who at the time was a U of I student.
I remember hearing Carole King.
When you're down,
I think she did, you know, when you're down in trouble and you need some love and care, you know. And I said, well, that's what everybody's here for, you know. They're trying to take care of these people in our community that need some help. So you've got a friend, you know.
Think of me, and soon I will be there.
And you start to see the families in Indiana and the families in Illinois and Iowa, and you start to realize that this is happening right here. And these are my neighbors, and, well, maybe we can help make a difference.
Does it have the same sort of punch that it did 25 years ago?
As far as having a punch or having something to do to influence our policymakers, evidently not. Evidently, in 25 years, we haven't been able to get their attention. Doesn't mean we're going to quit.
What more can you do, really?
Well, we can keep doing it and keep telling them what a bunch of turds they are for not doing something about it.
The Schraders have been married for more than 40 years, but this past May, Anita was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
I get a little more tired now than I did before. Hopefully things will continue as is for quite some time.
Even with Anita's illness, the Schraders don't have any immediate plans to retire. Of their 9 children, only one stuck around to work on the family farm. And now the Schraders say they hope a new generation will keep these older farms going as long as there's a need for the small family farmer. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
And I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension, the host of the Closing Mark Report Commodity Week in this program, The Farming World. Our thanks to Sean Powers for all of his work putting our Farm Aid respective together. Hey, be sure, by the way, speaking of Commodity Week, that you tune in tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. on WILL AM 580. Jerry Golke will be our guest.
It's National Apple Dumpling Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1677, Stephen Hales was born, an English botanist. He pioneered the quantitative experimental approach in plant and animal physiology. His work showed the importance of air and light in plant growth, and he investigated plant respiration. In 1869, John Elder died, a Scottish marine engineer. He co-developed the compound steam marine engine. His engine divided steam expansions into two cylinders so that each cycled through a smaller range of temperatures and pressures, which improved fuel efficiency. In 1872, the first U.S. patent for an automatic sprinkler system was issued to Philip Pratt. And in 1911, Cal Rogers took off from Long Island, New York, on what would be the first U.S. coast-to-coast airplane flight. Along the way, he made 30 stops, including 19 crashes, before reaching Pasadena, California. During the 49 days of the flight, he logged 82 hours in the air. And that's this day in agricultural history. Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. It's Hunger Action Month, and Americans nationwide are promising to do their part against domestic hunger, including Lisa Braltz. She's pledging to take the SNAP Challenge. She has the details in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
It's not something I talk about much, but given that September is Hunger Action Month and a bunch of local folks are about to test themselves on their frugal living skills for a week, more about that later, I'll talk about it today. I'll admit to you right now that once upon a time, I was a food stamp mom. In today's parlance, I'd be a SNAP mom. SNAP stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Back in the early 90s, I found myself unemployed and the newly single parent of a young baby in Chicago, so I did what I had to do. I signed up to get some help. It wasn't an easy thing for me to do on so many levels, and I learned very quickly that not having much in the way of home economy skills wasn't going to help matters at all. It added insult to injury. I knew next to nothing about cooking from scratch or comparison shopping or buying in bulk. My taste in food was simple, but somehow it all seemed to cost more money than I realized. I wasn't sure how to make my budget work. Enter my friend Tanya, another young food stamp mom with a small baby. The big difference between Tanya and me was that she could make amazing food from completely unrelated ingredients, and I couldn't. One day, she took me along on a shopping trip to the big health food store, where she measured out, with confidence, rice and flour and beans and oats and spices into bags, which she bought along with a few other staples. She bought her produce at a small produce market nearby, along with some eggs and cheese and a little bit of ice cream as a treat. I was blown away by how much food she was able to buy for so little money in just two stops. And I was even more blown away when she made incredible meals from this food. I credit Tanya with opening my eyes to not just cooking, and not just cooking from scratch, but cooking totally differently. Cooking in a way that was conscious of budget, conscious of nutrition, conscious of skill, and conscious of waste. Thanks, Tanya. I doff my hat to you. 20 years ago, there was nowhere near the interest that exists now in sourcing at least some, even a little, of one's family food supply locally. But in 2010, this interest is everywhere, especially with the proliferation of independent grocers and farmers markets. In the past, people receiving SNAP benefits and or living on low incomes have not had much access to these markets for local food. But with farmers markets across the country being enabled to accept SNAP cards, as well as those independent grocers offering cooking classes for people on a budget, local food is more in reach for people of all incomes. September 19th through 25th, next week, is the week in September that many local residents will embark on this year's SNAP Challenge for Hunger Action Month. It's a week where individuals try to get by on just over $30 worth of food for the week, which roughs out to about $4.50 per day. the average amount a SNAP client has to spend on food. While there are many ways to feed oneself while taking this challenge, I wanted to know how possible it is to use local fruits and vegetables. It's been a long time, and I don't have Tanya to ask anymore. So I went to someone local who's got the skills, my friend Jacqueline Hanna, who teaches classes about healthy eating on a budget for Common Ground Food Co-op in Urbana, Illinois, and has been developing strategies for her own participation in this year's challenge.
I love picking my own food from the garden, and it's amazing how unbelievably cheap it is. You know, when I spent, I think, $12 on tomato plants, and I've gotten just pounds and pounds and pounds of tomatoes. That would buy, I think, 3-4 pounds of local tomatoes. And I've just endless supply of tomatoes and onions. I spent about $4 on onion starts, and I'm probably going to have onions until January now that I have from my own kitchen. So I think including my own food that I've grown myself, not because I'm like, oop, this is a secret out, but because I wish families would take that idea seriously. And I think if we're going to address food insecurity, we have to take that idea seriously. It's something I would like to see people doing more of and being educated more on. So I'm going to include food from my own garden. But other than that, I'm going to use all sorts of tips and tricks I've learned shopping the market late, finding out what's in season. Items that I've put up from last year, I'm going to use them. I'm going to cost them in, but I'm going to use them. So when I make my own peach butter, you know, I can buy that container for $3 at the co-op, but I'm making it at home for $1.25. So, you know, again, some of this pre-prepared food is going to factor in.
It must be noted, it's Jacqueline's dirty little secret that she doesn't like to garden, but despite her neglect, her small garden's yields have been quite satisfactory. And while she knows that many SNAP clients don't have the resources to garden, she also firmly believes that learning to grow food is a skill we should all be reclaiming in even the smallest of ways. So we talked a little, too, about cooking. A big part of my story, remember, involved not knowing how to cook or otherwise prepare fruits and vegetables other than eating them raw. Jacqueline and I agree that it's pretty common in this day and age. She had some great words of advice for those taking part in the challenge, living the challenge every day, or just thinking about ways to trim their food budgets.
One thing I see when I'm teaching healthy eating on a budget is that people want to do everything black or white. So they rush into doing everything I recommend in a healthy eating budget, eating tons of fruits and vegetables and cooking all their own beans and doing everything, and then they crash. And what I recommend to people is try a few things. Get successful on one or two ingredients and celebrate that and be excited about that and don't kick yourself about the rest. Because as you start to enjoy a new fruit or a new vegetable or you get your kid to try mangoes and your family is starting to enjoy that or you're figuring out ways to put a little bit of fresh spinach in your diet but you didn't think you liked spinach, celebrate that because you're going to move towards that, believe me.
I was lucky to have Tanya come into my life at a crucial juncture. She helped me understand at a time when I wasn't sure I believed her that people of all incomes deserve to eat well and that people of all incomes deserve to develop their own personal positive food culture. Both are possible. Good luck with the challenge.
Lisa Broth's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. If you have an idea for In My Backyard, email us at willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's willagstaff@illinois.edu.